Katharine Hepburn said that if you obey all the rules, then you miss all the fun. Whilst T.X. Huxley believed that a man's worst difficulties begin when he is able to do as he likes.
There's a orangutan in my bedroom and I don't know what to do. She plays with all my teddies and keeps borrowing my shoe.
In 2018, Iceland's Christmas ad never made it onto our screens.
There are humans in my forest and I don't know what to do. They're burning it for palm oil, so I thought I'd stay with you.
The budget retailer's decision to partner with Greenpeace and Emma Thompson to present an ad condemning the destruction of rainforest habitat was banned by censors for being too political. However, thanks to its banned status, it became one of the most viewed adverts on social media over the festive season.
Orangutan in my bedroom, I swear it on the stars. The future's not yet written, but I'll make sure it is ours.
At the time of recording, the video has received nearly 6 million views on YouTube. On this episode of the History of Advertising podcast, we are looking at censorship. What it means for brands, how it affects creativity, and what advertisers do to get around it. Let's kick off with a spot of sex.
That was great.
Cosmopolitan, page 60.
Cosmopolitan began life in the 1880s, when it was first marketed as a magazine for families in the US. It later transformed into a literary magazine, and then, later still, in the 1960s, it became a women's magazine, covering the distinctly unfamily-friendly topics of health, careers, fashion, relationships, and sex. By the 70s, the magazine was immensely popular in the US, and it was decided that a UK version should be launched. The first edition of Cosmopolitan UK arrived in February 1972. Kramer Saatchi was the ad agency tasked with promoting the launch, and Jeremy Sinclair was a lead creative responsible for the campaign.
We wrote this campaign, and one of the scenes in this, we had a couple in bed, and he was saying to her, "Where do you get the idea of doing that?" So it's a series of people saying, "Where do you get the idea of doing this?" And so the ITCA, as it was then, said, "You can't have a couple in bed, one person saying to the other, 'Where do you get the idea of doing that?'" I said, "Well, we said they are married." They said, "We don't care if they're married or not. You can't have that, not on British television."
So in the proposed ad, people would be shown the many wonders which Cosmopolitan can impart by answering questions with page numbers. "Where did you get the recipe for that?" Cosmopolitan, page 12. "Where did you find this holiday location?" Cosmopolitan, page 103, etc., etc. All Jeremy needed to do was to find a way of including Cosmopolitan's sex tips into the campaign.
Could she just say Cosmopolitan, page 148? I said, "Yeah." So as long as it's not page 69, we're not having any jokes like that. So because of the rhythm of the rest of the commercial, "Where did you get that idea? Where did you get that idea? Where did you get that idea?" You just cut to her at the end, just saying Cosmopolitan, page 114, and the question was in your mind, which made it infinitely better. So I've been eternally grateful for the censors ever since.
"I don't believe it. Where did you hear that about Richard Burton?"
Cosmopolitan, page 82.
"That was great. Where did you learn to cook like that?"
Cosmopolitan, page 113.
"How did you raise the money to buy a car like this?"
Cosmopolitan, page 60.
"Tell me, where did you get the idea to come here for your holiday?"
Cosmopolitan, page 23. Cosmopolitan, a sensational new magazine for women who are interested in men, love, fashion, food, men, travel, films, beauty, and themselves. And men.
Cosmopolitan, page 114.
Cosmopolitan, first issue out today.
The final shot of the ad is a couple in bed, with the lady telling a delightfully intrigued man a page number from Cosmopolitan. It was a solid campaign, one which greatly helped the launch of Cosmopolitan, a magazine that remains in healthy publication almost 50 years after its first issue. That's how you sneak sex past the censors. But how do you get cigarette ads past them? In these days, of course, you can't, with the UK having banned the direct and indirect advertising or promotion of tobacco-based products. But in the 70s, there was still some wiggle room. So Frank Lowe was managing the Benson & Hedges account for ad agency CDP in the 70s. He recalls how the increasingly stringent rules were affecting his ability to advertise B&H.
B&H is a very interesting story. The campaign that was had run for many years was pictures of the pack in print, and which was pure gold from Benson Hedges with that bum 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 the Bach music. I couldn't get any ads through the Code of Advertising Practice because, as far as cigarettes were concerned, first of all, you obviously couldn't have people in it because that might imply enjoyment. And of course, when you look back at those wonderful American ads with Doctors Prefer Lucky Strike and things, they look so wonderful and quaint now. And we couldn't have anybody smoking, obviously. We didn't really like blue sky or grass. That implied a healthy environment, so that was out. And so it became impossible.
Frank's solution to the problem was a radical one. After being inspired by an exhibition from surrealist painter Magritte, Frank tasked his creatives with developing a series of billboards which were completely and utterly random. There was no strategy behind the campaign, other than the fact that the images had to be nonsensical.
First one was a pack sitting outside a mouse hole, and it had a blue wall and a pink skirting board, the mouse hole in it. And he had another one, I think it may have been a bird in a cage, with the bird in the cage and the shadow was a pack on the wall. And we had three or four of those. And I said, I think that's just the thing, Alan, just the thing. I like that very much and it'll help me. So I took it down to the Advertising Standard Authority and I presented it to them and they said, well, what does it mean? And I said, it doesn't mean anything. It must mean something. No, it doesn't mean anything at all. It's just some nice pictures and it means nothing. And they said, well, how can we judge it? I said, well, you normally look for grounds on which you can turn things down, which I understand, but as this means nothing, you can't really turn it down. He said, no, you're right, we'll carry on.
Buoyed by the success of the surrealist billboard campaigns, a cinema ad was commissioned, which was to be similarly bizarre. Hugh Hudson was the director hired to film the ad, which was called The Swimming Pool.
And there wasn't really a story, because it's there's no continuity to the story. There's no logic to the story. The disparate, strange elements that go together to make it notable. But that's what the ideas were for Benson Hedges. You'll get attention, you'll catch attention, if you do something odd like this. And it was indeed odd.
How does one bring a mind-boggling, surrealist visual campaign to life for podcast listeners? Well, the ad is as grand and as bonkers as this music which plays underneath it. It is a series of peculiar images which do not relate to one another. There are helicopters, there are iguanas, there is a rattlesnake, there is a diver swimming through a pool with a can opener, and there is an oversized packet of Benson & Hedges which is dropped into a pool. Aside from that, I'm afraid I really can't help you. The ad was filmed in the barren landscape of Arizona. Its location was chosen because it was guaranteed that there would be sun. However, of course, when the team arrived to film, there was nothing but rain.
The first week we couldn't shoot. It rained. Rained like you've never seen. And there are, in that desert there, there's no drains on the road. So they get what are called flash floods. So they come up like here. So the hotel we were staying, we were walking around reception in Wellington boots. And every day I rang the client, said, terribly sorry, we can't shoot today. And Maggie was the brand manager. And it was costing, I think, $12,000 a day just to sit there. And in the end, the boss rang me and said, Frank, Maggie's getting a bit worried because you're ringing every day saying you can't shoot. Do us a favour. Stay there till you've got it. And bring it back, but make sure it's wonderful. I'll talk to you when you've got the film.
Fortunately, the final ad was wonderful, and it is frequently hailed as being one of the most revolutionary and inspired campaigns that has ever been produced for a cigarette brand. Censors have been accused of curtailing creativity ever since they came into existence. However, as the campaigns from this episode has shown, sometimes limitations can act as a boon to originality. In the case of Cosmopolitan, censored strengthened the original ad, whereas with Benson and Hedges, they inspired a move towards surrealism, and resulted in one of the most visually extraordinary ads that has ever been produced. So, in short, Atland should be censored in more things. It might lead to better work. The History of Advertising podcast was presented by Jack Meggett Phillips, and featured contributions from Jeremy Sinclair, Sir Frank Lowe, and Hugh Hudson. The programme was produced by Jane Jarvis and Jack Meggett Phillips. If you're interested in learning more about the ads featured on this programme and the work of the History of Advertising Trust, please visit hatads.org.uk.